When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my longtime friend, Kyle Schoenewill. Friend from work, I should say.
That's right.
I almost left out my parenthetical. I never leave out.
That's it. Start over.
Oh gosh. And you know, it is fun saying that it's a podcast about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're talking about the multiverse today, as we'll discuss in a second. But I don't know. In some ways, the movie that we're going to be talking about, it feels the most MCU-ish. At least like central of any project that we've watched recently. So whether or not you enjoy the take on the MCU, I think it's, you know, this whole section of the watch has been about kind of new characters and things. And it's nice to come back to some familiar faces and alternate versions of familiar faces.
Robbie, I'm curious from your perspective in general, has your mind changed at all about phase four? Now that we're completing this entire rewatch, I was thinking about you because I think there have been a lot of projects where when I rewatched it, it is only reaffirmed maybe what I felt the first time for the most part. And some of those have slid up and down in my rankings. And so anyways, yeah. I went to the FFWpodcast.com and I actually went to our rankings, which you hate. And I was looking at how, you know, all these movies are lumped under tier two. But I was looking at how those fall and how those shake out. And You and I have constantly shifted what actually would be a ranking within phase two, tier two. Yeah. Sorry. And I don't know, man, we need to reevaluate this. I think this is crazy. I thought Multiverse of Madness was better this time than any other time. Not that it was unbelievable, but amongst the tier two films for me, yeah. I think I would slide it up now.
Yeah.
This is what we have right now, okay? You tell me. Pay attention. Ready? Love and Thunder is the very top of tier two.
Uh-huh.
Far From Home. Black Widow. Shang-Chi. The Marvels. Wakanda Forever. Multiverse of Madness. Age of Ultron. Quantumania. Doctor Strange. Cap 1. Which is a lot to remember. But right away off the bat, I'm thinking like just because of time and what has happened, I think Quantumania would be the last movie in tier two, I think. Like that would have to go down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Doctor Strange, the first movie, might be a tighter film, probably. And then I thought this one could almost jump up like over the Marvels and maybe even over Shang-Chi. I don't know.
Man, I love this. Okay. Honestly, I think we put a pin in this because This is a whole, like I would like to have a larger conversation about Phase 4 as a whole. And we probably will some as we get into Multiverse of Madness. But I think you... I'm totally on the same page with you. I think that it's really interesting now, having talked through all these, having watched through them, even though we didn't do it all in one like fell swoop like we did with the Infinity Saga, it's still kind of interesting now to look back.
For sure.
And yeah, maybe
they all,
maybe,
they all just have their things, you know? That's what's so fascinating. They're all almost interchangeable in that if it's your scene, it's well done, it's fun, and they all have a little a little visual something, or but I'm not sure about this plot choice.
Well, and they do, like, I think something that we discussed early on that separates Phase 4 definitely from all the phases of the Infinity Saga, I think, but certainly 2 and 3 is, like, there is so much more of a stamp on most of these. Like I think that the big achievement of Marvel towards the tail end of the Infinity Saga was just such intense quality control, where it was like they found a way to make stuff that was almost always going to make almost everybody happy. Like if you wanted to go see a superhero movie, most of those movies you were going to walk away pretty happy with. And I think so much of Phase 4 is like, there are certain things where it's like, man, that's a weird call, but I kind of love it. Or, man, that's a weird call and I kind of hate it. And I feel like there's so much of that where it's like certain things, they're not better or worse even than Infinity Saga movies, but there are some that are just like, you have a different relationship with it. But I think that the beauty of like, and what I'm excited about with this movie is, you and I have talked about like over and over again, how it's kind of harder to talk about a movie like Winter Soldier sometimes, because like there's not really a lot of reason to dig real deep. Like it's like, yeah, this is just a very straightforwardly great movie. No one's really debating that. But I do think that these movies that are a little bit like stranger, pun intended, they make you dig in and figure out like, what is this? Like, what's the theme here? Like, what are we trying to accomplish? Like, is that, like when we talked about Love and Thunder, like how much of what we're pulling from that is what Taika intended? How much does it even matter if we're talking about kind of like death of the artist? And I think that those are all questions that we never really found ourselves asking in the Infinity Saga. And maybe some people are glad that we didn't have to ask those questions in the Infinity Saga. But I do think it's made for some more interesting conversations when it comes, especially with films like this.
For sure. For sure. Okay. Well, I rewatched Multiverse of Madness last night. Did you rewatch it as well?
Or at least
recently? Okay.
I did. Yeah. Before we jump in, two quick announcements on my side of things.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
One, just kind of state of the world here. This episode is coming out on Monday, what, the 24th?
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
I'm excited. I've talked about this some in the past couple of weeks. Wednesday coming up is 1 month from Deadpool and Wolverine.
Okay.
Which is crazy. And I want us to celebrate that by formally releasing this little streamlined multiverse saga watch that I've discussed.
Okay.
And it's going to be out there. And here's the thing. If you want it, at least initially, because this is the easiest for us and I think it makes the most sense, it's going to appear on our Substack. If you're a patron, you'll get it also through Patreon. But if you are just a listener on the main feed, this is a push to go and subscribe to our newsletter. We've actually had a lot of folks subscribing lately, which makes me happy because I feel like it's always getting better. But that's announcement number one. I've really enjoyed this. I think it's going to be fun. And it's about 15 projects overall if you take some of the Infinity Saga stuff that's relevant and add it.
That's pretty stripped down. Nice work.
I think it's going to be gives people about a month if they do want to do this. And
I was nervous you were going to say here is my stripped down version. It's 33 projects. You know, you can, well, you can eliminate four of them.
Well, the thing is too, what I like, and I'm going to specify this in our post with the order here, but, you can basically, if you want, just start with the phase four stuff. And I still think it works, but I was watching through it and I thought it works a lot better if you watch it in the context of some of the setup that started earlier on. And it's just the movies that you would watch in the Infinity Saga are some of my favorites anyway. So I think really it could be like 7 or 8 projects if you want to cut that stuff. So announcement number one, June 26th, to celebrate the month until Deadpool, we're going to have that out. But announcement number two, because that kind of covers the MCU side of the prepping for Deadpool that we're wrapping up here today. We are also finally getting to Deadpool, which is really exciting.
Right. Here we go.
So a week from today, if you're listening to this episode on the day that we've released it, we are going to have a very special episode getting ready, getting our minds right.
Get your mind right.
Deadpool 1, which Kyle has still never seen.
My mind needs to get right.
So I'm really excited about that episode, one, because we just kind of get to talk a little bit and set the table. But two, it is going to feature an interview that was really, really fun that I think people are going to enjoy. I recently got to sit down with Joe Kelly, who people will know as one of the, maybe the preeminent Deadpool writer on the comic side of things. He has been called the Chris Claremont of Deadpool, which is to say he didn't invent the character, but he defined him so thoroughly. Even like if you've seen the movie, like all of the core characters, a lot of the plot is pulled straight from his work. And he is currently writing a 3-issue miniseries that is starring Deadpool and Wolverine that's coming out currently at comic stores. So we got to talk about both of those, his history with the character, his take on the character, his take on the relationship between that character and Wolverine, and kind of how fruitful that can be. And he's just such a nice guy, kind of a comics legend in his own right. So that's going to be part of our Deadpool hype episode. And I wanted to give people a heads up now. We will also put on the Substack some links to comics you can get on Organic Price Books that will prep you really well for that episode. And also just if you want to know more about the Deadpool comics background. So we will have all that stuff out, but just know if you are interested in really digging in there, it would be fun for you to have read some of those comics beforehand. But again, we'll follow up there in the written word side of things. Those are my announcements.
Well, I'll just add that means the Monday after the 4th of July. So now I'm confused what day that is, but exactly maybe July 7 or 8. Fact check me. That's when we'll officially have a Deadpool 1 episode available. So July 8th. You're going to want to watch Deadpool again if you've seen it before that time. Probably the week of. And then that'll be a mega episode. My first reactions ever to Deadpool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we're just right on the doorstep. Deadpool 2, some fun stuff on Friends from Work Plus, and then Deadpool and Wolverine, which I'm anxiously awaiting our screener, as you can see from the emails, I'm sure, that I've copied you on. Trying to make plans. Do I need to book a plane ticket, Disney? That's what I need to know. Man. Do I need to book a ticket?
I'm going to book a plane ticket to everywhere they could possibly be giving us screeners just to cover my bases.
We'll do all of them. And just do it in the order of the time changes so you can still make it, you know? We'll do California first, and then New York first, we'll quick get back out to California.
Yep.
For me, it's just, I'm so busy, but I feel like this is something we got to watch together. So I really like even if I have a Nashville screener, I might need to do a Austin or LA trip with you. And here's the other thing, though. I don't know if you saw this. I think the world premiere, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg.
I did see
this. Actually the 22nd of July. Point being, it's only 4 days before the release again. So that means if we don't go to the premiere, our screener is going to be not until Tuesday at the earliest, probably, with a Thursday night release. So that'll be scramble mode to make sure.
That's about how Multiverse of Madness was. Like
we've done that a couple times. Spider-Man as well, maybe? Question mark.
Yeah, the ones that I feel like are super, super spoiler, like heavy or have the potential. I feel like it's same thing like with Endgame. But I remember like because some we've seen fairly like a very early, like a week or more. And then like Multiverse of Madness, I think we had 1 or 2 days max before it hit.
So you and I need to get to work. That's the point. We got a lot coming up here in the next month. This is going to be a really, really fun and busy month on so many levels for friends from work. So yeah, I won't say that. Yep. Just there's a lot. There's some stuff, but I'm not going to tease it yet. We'll just say we're working on some stuff. July is going to be awesome. Okay. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Robbie, I'll let you kind of take the lead here. I'll never forget watching this film with you and Candace in Austin and watching the beginning scene with Wanda revealing that she's wearing the Scarlet Witch outfit. And you're like, okay. And then her killing everyone at Kamar-Taj. And I remember just looking at you about halfway going like, oh no, like this is not a phase. They're leaning into this. Like that's when the horror hit me. Like, you know, you remember that towards 80% of the film, I was like, oh no, 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 no. Like this is irreversible. And then the famous TikTok video of me just collapsing on the hotel or the theater floor on the way out, because that's what had happened to me. The shock of some of that has worn off and it's allowed me to see some of the positive story elements that have come from that. And maybe what you'd even consider to be some of the logical story decisions regarding Wanda. Mm-hmm. Now that the shock of that has worn off years later, you know, my wife still gets mad at certain things about it. I love that you kicked off the entire episode by talking about Phase 4 being the phase of takes from directors. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated to see if the back half of Phase 5 and the early half of Phase 6 is going to shift and all in that. Like, will Marvel take some of that as a critique and then shift back towards what they consider to be safer, like Winter Soldier vibe? I'm interested to see if that has affected it at all. Like, as part of this reboot of sorts, like this break Marvel's been going through, will the tone shift? Will it change how directors, like how much freedom they have on these films? I'm curious about all of that, and we can get into that in the future. But I love that you started there, because this and Love and Thunder might be the pinnacle of what it looks like to take a Marvel Cinematic Universe character and formula and really let the director have a stamp for good or for bad. And this might be the pinnacle of that.
Yeah. I feel like there's so much in common when you look at those movies. And what I think is so funny about that is I almost always find people love one and hate the other. Like it's
right. They should be so similar.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, and I get it, because the style of them is very different. You know, like Thor is so like colorful and bright and silly. And this one is like, it's also silly, but in a way that's very much like a campy horror movie.
Very campy. And that's,
so
Thor is goofy. This movie's campy. There's a little bit of a difference there.
That's true. That's true. Cause I think some of the criticisms of Love and Thunder talked about it feeling like an extended SNL sketch, which is a different thing than how I think people that criticized Multiverse of Madness would have described that. Although even then, I mean, I'm excited. I don't know if we'll have time today, but to talk about the kind of Sam Raimi and Michael Waldron contributions here and what that means for the future. But
where do you want to start? I have some thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I know that you were indicating earlier that you had maybe an opening thought, unless we already covered that.
Yeah, we already covered it.
Okay. Fair. I kind of on this one, I just want to dive in. I think I've got some notes that are more or less chronological. And I think that in doing that, we'll wind up talking about the bigger issues. And we can kind of sum it up at the end, if that works for you.
You love to see it. Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, after a quick word from these sponsors.
Okay, so having watched this a few more times now, I've realized that, again, like Love and Thunder, maybe I'm projecting, but I do think that this movie is, it's doing something that's very specific, and I don't just mean stylistically. Like, I think that Raimi's obviously putting his Raimi spin on it, but I know that, like, Waldron got some flack for the script, and I think different people had different ideas of what they wanted it to be. And setting aside the actual writing and the dialogue and what your take is there, I feel like some people with this movie felt that it should have been more of like a tour through the multiverse. Like, we're seeing so many countless universes. Like, I'm
everything,
thinking of some,
everywhere all at once. Yeah. Which was honestly, the same year. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is crazy. And not that, like, I think they came out pretty close to each other even within that year.
Right, but that was the criticism I remember. It's like, in the same year, here's how you make a multiverse movie, and it's not this.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, is fair. I don't think anybody wants to have to weigh those movies against each other.
For sure. And it's fair from the perspective of the actual multiversal stuff. If you do want a traversal,
right,
that's the movie to do it. This is not it.
Yeah. And I think that on the one hand, like, in defense of Marvel's decision not to do that, that, like, now seeing the timeline, I feel like that would have been a little premature. Like, I think it makes sense if we're going to do something that is really like everything everywhere all at once level, and the way that we're not just traversing, but experiencing all these different realities, I think that that would need to be closer to whatever Secret Wars looks like anyway. So I kind of liked this both as like a little tease, but also what I realized is it's not just like they.
Well, in a similar tone to Secret Invasion, I do wonder if in general, would the project be viewed slightly more fondly if it was a different title? Like, if Secret Invasion was called The Origin of Nick Fury, or Nick Fury, Where It All Began.
Yeah.
If you called it that, and then if this was just something different to where people don't have the multiverse expectation, then you still get into some multiversal stuff. And it's like, oh, Doctor Strange doesn't know much about it. And that's really fascinating. But again, to put it as like, this is the multiverse movie, I think that's what happens in people's brains. And then it feels like a letdown. Cause I'm with you. Yeah. I think in some ways, if it was called Doctor Strange 3, it's actually doing some stuff really well.
Or 2.
Specifically, sorry, Doctor Strange 2. Sorry, doing some of the like Christine stuff really well and kind of tying up some of those storylines that have nothing to do with the multiverse.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they kind of do in a way where like I understand why that's the direction that Waldron took, even with the multiverse. Cause I this was the first time I thought, you know, when they first,
But title-wise, do you agree that could make a difference?
I do, but I wonder now, like, because the sense I get is that they and this was, I'm sure, the case with Secret Invasion too. Like, they threw out all those titles so early in, like, 2019, and I bet in most of those cases, they were like, this is the title, and we're going to kind of write a movie to fit this title, and or write a show to fit this title. Mm. And I think that you're right. The title does give you that sense that we would be looking at something that's more like traversal oriented. But I kind of feel like what Waldron did is he took an alternate meaning of that title. Like, instead of it being like, oh, there's so much madness because there's so much multiverse, I think it's more like the multiverse that they are introducing here and that they do show for the first time us traveling to, and the madness, which I think is Wanda. And I kind of buy that. Like, I see what that is and how it kind of makes it more of a, you know, it's a different spin on the title, but I kind of agree with your larger point, which is it's, I think people were
expecting
more of like a,
even if you don't change the title, it's the expectations. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Waldron is probably accurately representing what he interpreted the title to be, but it misled some people, not at his fault.
For sure. For sure. I think to that end, what I appreciate about what Waldron's doing here is he's digging into things that we've only seen like briefly explored in Stephen Strange's other appearances, or things that we haven't seen explored since the first movie, which, like we've said, it was so weird. This is the longest we've ever had between a first installment and a second installment of a particular series, just because of when Infinity War fell.
Yeah, right.
And so I liked the callback there, but I think that what he did is he looked at the multiverse not as just like a look how crazy and zany we could be, although I think Raimi brought a lot of that to the table. He looked at it from the perspective of like endless, like what do you do when there are endless like what could have beens out there? Like if you're somebody that's prone to like, if you're cerebral in the way that Stephen Strange is, and you are made aware of all of these different ways things could have panned out, how does that impact like this idea of contentment or happiness, as they say, throughout the whole movie? And that's not like, that's not even us reading into anything. Like I realized on this watch over and over and over, he's repeating back this question of, are you happy? Are you happy? Are you happy? All coming from that first wedding scene. And looking at the multiverse through that lens, I think is really creative. It's a much more like intimate and kind of moving, like focused way of exploring that, instead of trying to make it fully like another, like an amped up version of like the Loki season one finale, where it's like, oh my gosh, everything's so out of hand. Like it's running away from us. Like I think that's maybe what I thought we would be coming out of Multiverse of Madness with. But I think that, yeah, for better or worse, Waldron decided to do something else entirely that is really like, what does the multiverse mean for Stephen Strange and Wanda Maximoff?
I think you're right. I think that's a great point. And I do think that contributed to why I watched it a little more enjoyably this time, because that's very similar to Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is, you know, if there's all these infinite possibilities, what is your purpose? What is the meaning of life? And Loki wrestles with that too. Like even that shot at the end of Loki season two, when Mobius doesn't know like where his place is anymore. Like, do I go back to the sacred timeline? Do I keep working here now that the threat that I like dedicated myself to? And I do think it's a fascinating thing to explore with characters like Wanda and Doctor Strange, where especially a Doctor Strange type character, where you are going to be the guy who checks in, is all knowing, is cerebral, but kind of always has things together, or like, you know, Peter Parker goes to him to ask for advice and ask for these things. And I, now that like the Thanos is over and you did that and you've lost some people because of it, I could easily buy, this is kind of me to be honest, I could easily buy that Stephen Strange would be like wrestling with big questions now of, what is my purpose anymore? And like, am I happy? Am I content to just live a single life in this sanctum, defending these little monsters that, you know, attack and these little problems and solving them? And that being my purpose. And I do love the movie wrestling with that. That's why I think my favorite conversations are those with him and Wong, you know,
like
at the very end, where after you've seen all these multiverses and what this could be like, all these universes, that I still choose to be content in this one. So I do love starting there, because that is what the movie is ultimately wrestling with. And that's why I say the title is misleading, because I think even myself included went in with different expectations. But if it was Doctor Strange 2, I love the idea of him wrestling with, is he happy? That's a perfect character for that. And then contrasting all of that, like you said, to Wanda, who has gone through stuff and now finds out that maybe there are solutions in the multiverse where she can live a life in a different universe with her kids or with Vision and what that would look like. And contrasting those two opinions of like what Wong says versus the way Wanda's handling it, right? Like choosing to be content in this one.
Yeah. I mean, well, and I think that that's the, like, that's what I love about that character mashup is I don't think I had ever, like, it's such a great way of digging back into the history of the MCU and teasing something out. Like, I do think that there were so many great beats between really like from the start of phase three through Endgame that we just only had so much time to dig into and maybe didn't even really have time to recognize. Like, I don't know that Strange and Wanda ever had a scene together where they actually interacted before this movie. I don't think that they did. Like, they were both at like the battle at the end of Endgame, but as far as I know,
and the funeral scene.
But in terms of like them talking,
right.
But I, like the fact is like, Strange is the one that gave Thanos the time stone that allowed Thanos to do what he did to Vision and to Wanda by proxy. And that's really intense. And that's not something that I had, like the whole, you know, kind of looking
up
at
on
it,
that decision twice in this movie.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I mean. Like when I say kind of going through this chronologically, like I realized at the start, like the dream he's having, that's not a dream. And then that immediately followed up by the wedding and the conversation that he has with the doctor. They immediately look at Strange as the one that's like making the hard calls, but generally the hard calls require the sacrifice of others. Like, I'm not saying that he's doing it not heroically, because like in Infinity War, he does something that he knows will cause him to be dusted. But ultimately, he also knows that it's going to be Tony that has to make the ultimate sacrifice. And he knows that like it's Vision that will have to make the ultimate sacrifice. And then even in like No Way Home, you look at it like he's the one he's willing to send all these villains back to their deaths. And Peter isn't. And then he's ultimately like, he's not happy about it, and it's a really moving moment, but like all of that results in no harm to Strange.
It's a cool question.
It's Peter that loses his identity.
It's a great question for that other doctor to ask, because he's not a villain. I don't think the movie's trying to paint him as the bad guy, but wrestling with at least challenging him to where he kind of looks at him and goes, we were at war. Like, I made the only play we could have. But it's that little bit of defense of like, why are you questioning me on that, you know?
Well, and what I love about this as a follow-up to the first movie is, like, and it's in that line where he's like, you know, Stephen Strange, the best doctor and the best superhero, like, or the best surgeon and the best superhero. Like, it is... like this movie does such a good job of treating Stephen Strange as a character that is like unique from others within the MCU. Like sometimes, especially in movies like Infinity War and Endgame, when you just have so many characters, I think that people are primarily distinguished by their power set. Like you just get these little moments. But it's like, you know, sometimes everyone's kind of quippy and like they just don't have that much time to otherwise separate it out. But I like that we're returning to Stephen Strange, not just as the magic one, but like the one that is like he started this with such a chip on his shoulder. Like he's always been pretty cocky. And the whole theme of the first Doctor Strange is like, it's not about you. And him kind of understanding that he has to let go of parts of that, but it's still in him, you know, and it's not like when we have those moments, we are totally, you know, irrevocably changed as people. So I like that, like the people that have known him for a long time, like this doctor before he became a superhero, know that that's probably still in there. And so like, it would, I mean, it would be weird if like the person that you work with that you like kind of hate because he was always such a jerk, then like becomes the guy that gets to decide like how the fate of the universe like unfurls. Like you're going to have some like misgivings about that.
And I like he's celebrated that. For it.
Yeah. And then I think like to introduce that question there and then later to show to Steven other versions of himself that kind of are more villainous, like some more than others, but like that then like he kind of starts to look at himself the way he thinks people right. may be looking at him.
There's one shot that I kind of love with all my heart. It reminds me a little bit of Thor. It's right after that conversation at the wedding, and he has the conversation with Christine, and she says, "Are you happy?" And then the monster attacks, and he kind of smirks. Doctor uh-huh. Strange looks off the balcony, and he's like, "Oh." And then he gets to do his like cool flip into his
yeah.
outfit and go fight it, and it's right away like very arrogant, like, "Oh, this is no big deal. I'll take care of it."
Uh-huh.
Like he literally says to America after winning the fight, he goes, "These monsters, I don't have to worry about because I just took care of them." Like he says something like,
yeah, like
the monsters
obviously.
I can take care of. Obviously, I did, but it's you yeah. that I have a question about. It's like there's still such arrogance in that. And
mm-hmm.
it's almost like, to your point, even after the moving conversation from the doctor, he like that little smirk to me shows like he's still a little full of himself. Like he likes being the celebrity and likes that yeah. everyone's going to watch him jump off this balcony and fly and look what I can do and like fill up Christine's glass with wine, mm-hmm. even though she could get wine from the bar. You know, yeah. it's still like, and then that's why Christine kind of almost rolls her eyes for a second when they're under right. attack. It's like, oh, of course this has to happen now during my wedding. It's uh-huh. still about him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like him save. I mean, again, it's so similar to him as a doctor. Like I think back to that conversation in the hallway when he's talking to her about like, you know, I'm working on like procedures that are moving medicine forward. And you want me to go and like treat people coming in for gunshot wounds. And she's like, oh yeah, just saving lives, you know, because that doesn't matter. But it's like to him, he's always been like a greater good guy. Like he's always like, I'm the one that can both like see what needs to be done and do it. Like, and in that way, he and Tony have a lot in common. And so I think that to see that again here, and for them to have that conversation and the line about he has to be the one holding the knife, it is like, it's a very, you know, no pun intended now, like cutting remark because it is like,
that's pretty good.
I think that is the core of the character. And that's why I really appreciate Waldron leaning into that instead of just saying, oh, now we're going to put Doctor Strange in a bunch of new crazy situations and have him just be the perspective for the audience. Like, I like that it's about who he is. And again, contrasted with Wanda, who's never had the opportunity to be that person. Like, Steven is the one who's always been in control and got to do things to other people and for them. Wanda's the one that's only ever had things done to her and taken from her.
Wanda is in the Olympics. She's at least meddling in the Olympics for most loss, most suffering. She'd be up there right. with probably Spider-Man,
Thor
for sure. You know, we'd have to make a list of
right.
who's lost the most for sure. It, honestly, Robbie, for me, that's part of the reason why I think I just prefer the Waldron aspect of it more than the Raimi aspect of it. And
yeah.
That's a preference thing because some people are totally opposite, think that Waldron ruined Raimi's movie. But I think it's lines like that. It's the cutting remark. It's the smirk. It's some in general. I don't have a problem with the writing in this movie. I like it. I like it.
Yeah. I like Waldron's writing.
Yep. That's maybe a hot take, but
I do think that like the Raimi side of it there in that scene, just before we move away from the wedding, because I really do like that scene a lot. The one Raimi moment that I love, and it's a combo, but the line after that of, well, but you still didn't get the girl. And then the immediate shift to her actually walking down the aisle.
I don't know how to interpret that line. Is he trying to be a dick?
He's trying to be a dick. Yeah. But it's also like, because they've got
so like nonchalant. I don't know. I've never know how to read that line.
I love it because it's such a perfect way to like Strange is pushing back and saying like, look, you know, it's kind of this, like, I'm the superhero here. Like, I knew what I was doing. Like, I made the right play. I always make the right plays. Like, there's a lot kind of in between the lines there. And I like that he still, again, has like, he has like a jab left where he's like, well, like, Mr. Big Shot, like, you still didn't get the girl. And that's such a great reveal because we didn't know whose wedding it was until that moment. And it's like, it's brutal to watch. And I think that like the trick there of the transition is very Raimi-esque.
Let's shift to the Wanda side of it then. Because the next thing we do is we find out that she's behind it. You get the shout out to WandaVision straight up. And yeah, it's a dream, which at the first viewing, you know, we thought was just a dream. But then you kind of learn, well, it's maybe a glimpse into a multiverse. So it's really not just haunting her in her dreams, but it's showing her that it's possible elsewhere to be living that kind of life instead of the one she's in.
Yeah, I...
How did you view this viewing from the perspective of a step after WandaVision? Like, how does Wanda fit in this movie now, logically, plot-wise, to you?
I love that when we started WandaVision, we had just completed this like self-contained kind of satisfying saga that was the Infinity Saga. And then this series slowly unveiled the post-blip world, and it planted these seeds, a lot of which we've maybe forgotten about in all the craziness of Phase 4. And one of the reasons I like ending with Multiverse of Madness here is it's like, as Strange remembers Wanda, like after that line of like, oh, it's witchcraft, we do know somebody, we have the memory of that series kind of coming back to us.
I love the runes, like, shout out. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, before we met all these new heroes we've talked about, before we explored new dimensions, before there was Spider-Man and the multiversal counterparts, like, before even like the first steps towards like building the legacy of Steve Rogers and Tony Stark in our watch order, like, we saw Wanda like create this whole new reality so that she could have the perfect life that was stolen from her. And it's like, though she, to talk about like the transition from that to now, it's like, yes, she kind of dealt with that pain, but there was also more lingering at the end of WandaVision than I think we were made to understand, like, before this movie came out. Well, and like, in retrospect.
And the Darkhold, you know, that's the other.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. It's like, Agatha warned her that, like, the question is like, don't you know what you've unleashed? Like, the Scarlet Witch would herald doom and exceed the powers of the Sorcerer Supreme. Like, that's a really intense way to end the series for Wanda to just be like,
I do love it. I love they included that line in particular. I mean, how fitting is that line for this film?
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you have to admit that she does make peace with some of it. You know, she does let Westview go. She lets the residents leave. She gets rid of the hex. Like, clearly she's learning. But yes, is there some lingering pain? And then is the Darkhold able to then infect that pain and grow to where we see this today? I think has to be yes, obviously, according to Waldron. But
yeah,
to the degree you buy that, heavily influences your feelings on this film.
For sure. And I still think that's the biggest obstacle. Because, I mean, if you have to explain the connection that much and like make sense of it, then there probably is a flaw there in the relationship between the two projects. But I do think if you have the time to dig in and rewatch these in conjunction, what Waldron's doing is not just, one, I think it's clear that he's rooting what's happening to her in the Darkhold. And I feel like you get that like towards the end of the movie when she's like, oh my gosh, I would never hurt you. I would never hurt anybody. And it's like, she's been so unaware of what she's even been doing.
Yeah. Not to mention, as a side note, just an all time scene, like, actually moved Annika and I this viewing. Where, yeah, she is so, like, yeah, to your point, the Scarlet Witch is so taken over that mm-hmm. it takes that kind of moment. And then her acting there is amazing. The look on her face of like, no, I would never hurt anybody. Yeah. And then you look, the camera pans around. It's like, you've killed a million people. And this other Wanda is laying on the ground injured and your uh-huh. boys are terrified of you. And then that hit her. That really worked for me. This like, oh my gosh, yeah. it's that feeling of how the heck did I get here? Like how am I yeah. standing here at this moment right now? And then just the horrible, horrible shame and regret that she feels in her face. You can see in her face immediately yeah. of like, oh no.
Yeah.
It's, I have chills right now, man. Actually.
No, that, it is brutal.
Once I get over the fact that Wanda's a bad person, I yeah. still love her so much. I think Elizabeth Olsen's one of the best actors in the MCU. I think her outfit looks unbelievable. Like she looks like such uh-huh. a badass. I love how powerful they make her. Shout out to yeah. our Dark Phoenix episode on Friends from Work Plus.
Wow.
But I love like the hierarchy being set, like even from Agatha saying like,
yeah. her
I love when Dr. Strange goes like, man, what's going on? Oh, we could ask Wanda. I love even the shout out of saying uh-huh. like, I could call Spider-Man, I could call Hawkeye, but I'm going to call you because we know what you're capable of. I love when
yeah.
she reveals to be the Scarlet Witch and Wong then goes to Kamar-Taj and says, the Scarlet Witch is a being of unfathomable power and magic. Like uh-huh. if she could rewrite this all by herself, like basically being like, oh no, like the panic on Wong's face. I love yeah. that being like, yeah. this is, so again, set the hierarchy and then follow it. And it feels like yeah. that is the hierarchy they have set. Cause even what she did with Thanos yeah. before the Scarlet yeah, yeah. Witch.
Yeah.
So I just love everything about Wanda. I refuse to believe she's dead. I love her acting. I love her. Uh-huh. I even like the line she has in this movie. I mean, her facial expressions of, I don't think that's very fair. And
yeah.
some of the smiles of like, that's what every mother does. It's like, okay, oh, whoa. Man. It's like, it's so creepy in this one little, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It's like, whoa, easy. And I love how Strange plays it. The second Strange realizes, I love how it's revealed mm-hmm. that she accidentally says the name and says the lying's the hardest part. And then how Strange then plays it from that point on. It's like Strange becomes very clear. Yeah. Like he's walking on eggshells now. Like from that point on, it's like, how am I going to handle this? And I love how yeah. I love how he handles it as an actor, Benedict, but also the writing
yeah.
of like, Wanda, you're starting to sound like our enemies, you know, like don't like this mm-hmm. is, this is not you. This corrupts everything and it's corrupting you too. Oh, just yeah. everything about that. I love, sorry. I had to get that out. I had to say that all.
No, I think that's exactly right. And what I love is that it's the Darkhold. Like the Darkhold is playing enough of a role here for me to feel like Wanda's character is not irreparably damaged. And that's what I think maybe people didn't, and again, I'm not blaming viewers. Maybe that just didn't come across as much until you've had a chance to watch it a few times. But
like, so there's a world where she is alive doing. And the Darkhold's now gone and she doesn't act like this.
Right. And I think that like, it's okay that she had a fall from grace here, because it's like we did see elements of this in WandaVision.
For sure.
But this is like, she's now reached like a new level of power personally, aside from the Darkhold, because correct. Of what we saw in WandaVision. And now she has the Darkhold. So I think that like, it's a new thing for her to deal with. And also what I like sort of two things. One, I think some of our best moments in the MCU have been heroes kind of making wrong steps. Like,
if well, you we look haven't at, had it like this, but yes.
Well, no, but I just think you have to find creative ways to do it, you know, but it's like, mm-hmm. if you look at Age of Ultron or Civil War, it's like,
yeah,
there are
for sure.
like, there are times where Tony and Cap just do the wrong thing
yep.
and it's not to this level, but that kind of is the second piece of this where it's like, I love the Doctor Strange dichotomy, because even the final scene of WandaVision with her doing the Doctor Strange thing of like reading up on the Darkhold, but in her with her astral form, like there is so much that they have in common at that point where it's like she now realizes how powerful she is and is supposed to be, and kind of like doesn't heed, like it flips this like empowering moment at the end of WandaVision on its head, in the same way that like Stephen Strange's has been, where it's, yes, you do have this power, like, yes, you don't need, like, no, you don't need anybody to tell you who you are. But, like, also, you need some checks. And she just goes fully into it and then finds herself, like, Yeah. It all gets mixed up, like her own motives and whatever the Darkhold's wanting from her.
That last shot that kills me is when she finally reaches Wondergor or whatever in the temple, and Wong's like, "Is that not enough? Like we've done all this, like."
Yeah.
And then, and you're like, "Okay, maybe this is it. Maybe she's gonna return around." And then she goes, "No, I was meant to rule," and like levitates up to the top. And I'm like, yeah. "Oh no, that's what I remember being like. That's it. It's all. It's over. Uh-huh. It's like a hopeless. Like that was your last chance. That was your last chance."
That conversation between them, but the conversation between Strange and Wanda in the Apple Orchard, but then really the conversation they're having through the whole movie,
sure,
like down
every time
to
they
him,
see each other, yeah,
like dreamwalking, and it really is like, yeah, it's such a great, like, from her perspective, I understand, especially with her being like corroded by the Darkhold, like Steven is again showing up and telling her that she has to sacrifice, like in the same way that like the movie starts, the same way with like Infinity War. It's like he's so good at like pointing out like, oh, this is the thing, like America, you just have to die so that we can have your power and save everything,
right?
And like Wanda,
the other,
and it's not that callous, but like from their perspective, you know, it's like, and so Wanda's like, okay, well, yeah, you know, and that's the whole, like, all of this for a girl you met yesterday.
Right. Like, and and adding in the detail of the 838 Strange, who rose to so much power that literally destroyed a universe kind of thing, and then had to then humbly submit. So like, that's an interesting added wrinkle to this too. He meets another Strange who is all powerful.
Yeah.
And then you throw in the wrinkle of the what if version too. And it's like, yeah, you're getting a pretty accurate picture of this, what Doctor Strange as a character is and what he's capable of. And I do like them pointing out, I love the line from America to Christine saying, this Strange is different. Like this is the one that is different than the other ones. I love that kind of
stuff. And Xavier.
Yes, like, which is a huge highlight on this rewatch because of the X-Men
so
stuff
much.
We've been in.
Yeah.
Not only is he great, hold on. Everything about that I think is a huge win because it's cool to get the theme. It's cool to get the old yellow cart.
Uh-huh.
And then
when he does the like waves coming out from his head, when he does the like mental projection, which is straight from the cartoon.
And then when no one else trusts Strange, he does. I love that. And
we'll find out what kind of Doctor Strange you are.
And he says the same line, which is so good. Just because someone stumbles doesn't mean they've lost their way, which is like, that made my heart so happy.
Yeah.
And then honestly, it's insane to say this, but I kind of love the whole sequence of Wanda murdering everyone. I know like those actors were bummed that they weren't in it longer and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I again, because it's establishing, like, I love the establishing of the power where Strange, like a couple times where like a few characters go, we're not worried about your little witch. And Strange is like, no, you should be worried. Like, this is a little bit different than you're used to thinking. And then Waldron and Raimi double down on it. Which is like, she does show up and she brutally and instantly murders everybody. Mm-hmm. Hence the coolest shot of the movie, the what mouth, where it's like, okay. And then that look on John Krasinski's face of like, uh-oh, like this is different than what we were thinking it would be, you know?
Well, no. And maybe this is kind of a headcanon projection thing, but I realized the other thing I like about the Xavier element and making it like, I'm not saying that they're making this the universe that X-Men, like the animated series operates in, especially now that we have 97. But I do like that they're trying to say this is, you know, the almost same version of Xavier that we got in the cartoon, because it kind of, for me, and again, this probably is headcanon-y, but it also addresses any uneasiness I've ever had about like some of the silliness in this portion of the movie with like the Illuminati stuff. Cause I realized like a lot of it is like kind of intentionally cartoony, like the way that some of the Illuminati members introduce themselves. And it's so like melodramatic, like she throws the shield and Reed like teleports in. And
I like Doctor Strange being cocky and arrogant there, but I still don't love some of the actual dialogue choices. The Lumawadi, like that stuff.
Yeah,
I still don't.
It's strange.
Yeah, Bart's strange. Robbie, here's the thing. My camera's overheating again. We're going to lose it. And you have a phone call to our listeners, which I apologize, in 6 minutes, which sucks. So we have you have 6 minutes left to tell our listeners what you want to communicate about this film. Go.
I know. Okay. Well, that's one thing. I think looking at that as just like looking at each universe as being different and like having a different flavor, I think is kind of fun. And so I sort of like the 838 universe just being a little bit of a Saturday morning cartoons vibe and everything's a little heightened with the melodrama.
Okay.
So that's one thing. I also like in that whole sequence, the Ultron Wanda connection, like she crushes the Ultron head.
Yes. And
like
my wife pointed that out. Annika says, Annika turns to me, Wanda hates Ultron. I was like, oh, I forgot about that.
And like, I also noticed in this watch how much the movie is like, I think the reason in part that we don't see so many universes, at least beyond that one sequence, is because it's almost doing like a Christmas Carol thing for Strange. Like, in terms of the, like, he starts off with like the kind of Bob Marley, like, ponytail version of him. And then you move on with like the version of him in 838 that he hears about. And then the version that he finally meets, like, in the last, and what they all teach him about, like, the person he wants to be. And then the kind of like waking up to a new day thing at the end. So, like, the movie's just doing some interesting things that I think, again, maybe are projection, but the more I dig in, I like those. I love like how New York centered a lot of it is. Like even when mm-hmm. they're traveling to different universes, like I like some of the callbacks to prior Strange stuff. I love all the different ways we see him utilizing magic, even though some of it's silly with like the snakes and stuff. It's just kind of like, it's fun to see him do things other than like
less silly once you've seen What If.
Yeah, true.
In a cool way, I'm saying. Yeah.
Like I would say I think we should have another episode talking about the incursion of it all.
Yeah.
Because I really like looking at this in terms of what we're learning about the multiverse.
Feels like
maybe that's something we talk about before Deadpool and Wolverine.
I was going to say it feels like a perfect post Deadpool and Wolverine, like summer break. Like here now we've seen what happened. Like how does this all tie in kind of thing? For sure. I'll just say, in closing here, 3 minutes left. And I'm so sorry, listeners. I hate doing that, but work, life.
Hey, limitations breed creativity.
Yeah, well, that was great what you just said. I think everything I said in the main episode, I stand by. Just know the context of the original initial reactions episode was that I was so traumatized by the Wanda thing that I was really wrestling with that. So that affected everything. It clouded everything. Mm-hmm. I really do like this movie more. I said that. I think I would personally, and we got to get together. This is another episode. I would move it up in the tier two list towards the very top of it. I found myself way more entertained by it than Shang-Chi, even though Shang-Chi might be tighter. But a lot of the still the same things apply. Like it was everything we saw with Doctor Strange. Christine's a huge win. When he says I love you in every universe, legitimately moves me for whatever reason. That works like crazy.
I think the face your fears Doctor Strange thing works for me.
Yep. It's again, that's why I say move it up, because Love and Thunder is the only other Phase 4 film besides No Way Home that has that same feel where I can actually get emotional, like choked up.
Right.
And like that works for me. Christine works for me. The Illuminati stuff works for me. Wanda, I don't know about her being a villain, but I've bought it more with time, and her acting and all that stuff is such a huge win just to have her in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I still would just close it by saying there are still some of those things that like just aren't my preference. Like it is a little campy, like the America still thing like is cheesy to me and not in a cool way, not in an endearing way.
Although I think the story beat there is great. Like not the zombie part, but what he's doing, what he's saying to America.
I think him harnessing the souls is badass. Like I kind of love it.
Yeah.
And I love Wong being like Strange and showing up and how that actually juxtaposed to the trailer, which you thought he was pissed at Strange, but he's actually excited for Strange to show up in that moment because they don't show him smiling in the trailer. You know, there still are just things that haven't changed for me. Like some of the, like, I don't fully understand the montage sequences with the electric guitar, you know, like I know that's a tone, it's a thing, but I don't fully get it, if that makes sense. So like that, I don't need to reiterate all that because that hasn't fully changed, but I am more and more appreciating what the movie is doing. Does that make sense? So I'm moving it up despite a few things. Like visually, by the way, there are some things that look really cool. And then there are just some CGI issues that I'm going to blame on COVID. Like there are just some things that look green screened that really shouldn't.
I noticed that more now, I would say, and part of the, like, that's kind of a shame to me, because I think I was saying on our last episode, or whenever I was talking about rewatching the Raimi Spider-Mans recently, like, I think he's so good at directing some of these action sequences.
Yeah.
And I think that that is lost a bit here because of some of the, not just the CGI, like, looking bad, but I think just the CGI use in general.
Yeah, like there's a shot where they are on the rooftop with the Dead Strange, the uh-huh. And that's clearly not in New York on a rooftop. And I just wish, like Raimi of all people should have forced that they right. go to a rooftop, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially when you compare it to like the Spider-Man, right. Spider-Man 2.
Right. I'm not reinventing the wheel. It's just, I like it more than I used to.
Yeah. I just found out that my call got pushed back by half an hour, but now we've kind of gone through it. So it's weird. Maybe we could always schedule that's a call so for that's an so hour funny. After.
I actually did that. I scheduled it and then pushed it back.
But
surprise.
No, I think everything you pointed out is fair. Like, this is one where I don't even really disagree on those takes, but I do think that.
And the music is good, right? But it's not overly yeah. memorable. It's not like
I really like this. To me, feels like exactly the right project for Danny Elfman.
Okay, but would you say it's a top 10 score of the 50 projects or whatever we're at? I don't know. It's good.
Probably not top 10, but I would say like
above average.
Yeah, yeah. It's like certainly it's better than Age of Ultron. Like. I think that there are moments here that are really fun, that are very Elfman specific. Like I think the whole music battle thing, yeah. like from a score perspective, it is really fun.
I appreciate the WandaVision shout out to Christoph Beck, and I appreciate yeah. the one Doctor Strange shout out to Giacchino that we get. I do like those.
Uh-huh. And this was prior to the Ms. Marvel X-Men theme shout out. So I think this is yeah. the first time yep. we got that.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, I like that. Actually, the question that I'm glad we have like a few minutes to talk about, or a few seconds, because I know your camera's dying.
Yeah.
as we end, maybe just be thinking about, I was talking to Candace, you know, Waldron is clearly still writing Secret Wars, and I'm not really sure what the status is of the movie that would be Kang Dynasty. Maybe it still is Kang Dynasty.
You know what? It's not called Kang Dynasty, but I literally today saw that Benedict Cumberbatch said he is excited to begin filming in 2025 for Avengers.
Oh, wow. So not Secret Wars. So
I think the first Avengers. It might be a part one and part two now. Who knows? But
yeah, that's fun. Well, so that's like, Waldron is still around. He's still clearly like a big guy for Feige. And I think that Raimi came out of this, like whatever narrative was around this movie, it's almost the opposite of whatever narrative was around Taika. Like, I feel like after Love and Thunder, a lot of people were like, probably need like less Taika. Whereas I think that like we will definitely get another Raimi movie in the MCU, I think. Because there were so many, like I remember the reviews when they first came out, so many called out his direction as being like a really fresh thing. Hmm. Now, again, I understand why people would not like it, but I think that like it was enough. And this movie made so much money for like a Doctor Strange movie.
Our most listened to episode ever still to this day.
I mean, so my question for you is, taking that as a given, and assuming that we are getting another Sam Raimi movie at some point in the MCU, what movie do you think that should be?
I think that he is a master when the story is somewhat isolated. Like, I think that this film, having a few flaws when he has to juggle a lot of different MCU characters, and like the mm-hmm. way Spider-Man 3, again, I know there's studio things, like, gets a little off the rails when a lot of stuff happens, like Sandman shows up and it, like that right. doesn't seem to be a strength. So like I've read reports of him doing Secret Wars. That seems like a disaster to me.
Agreed.
Like, I don't want him trying to balance the history of the MCU and going back through it all. It takes a really specific person, as we talked about so many times with the Russos.
Yeah.
I'm more inclined for someone like Moorhead and Benson, even though they haven't shown it on a crazy level, but just someone who's going to balance those characters. That being said, Spider-Man 2 exists. Spider-Man exists.
Yeah.
This movie's pretty good. Like, he's made some bangers and some pretty good films. And I think he really flourishes when he doesn't have to do that stuff. So what would that be? That you can talk while I think for 1 second.
We have Spider-Man 4 coming up without a director. I mean, ostensibly.
I think a fresh take on Spider-Man would be fun. That's not because he couldn't do it, but just like...
It would be hard for him to outdo what he's already done.
Right, so and then start over with Spider-Man. Like we're wanting that vibe, but from somebody else now.
Yeah. I would love to see him, like, the only draw to Secret Wars, and I just don't think that this is at all worth it, but, like, it would be fun to see him get to join up with Toby again in some respect, but I just don't think that that would be worth...
Toby will be in that movie, but he can't be the main character. Like, that can't be the selling
exactly.
Point,
and so that's, like, it's just not worth, like... But that's the only reason why, like, I then... Because I don't... I totally agree that, like... The reason the Russos were so well suited for Infinity War and Endgame, in my opinion,
I'm gonna Google it,
is because they have such a grounded approach,
and because they had that history with Captain America, I think too, like with the
for
writers
sure.
too.
But like, yeah, that's true. The Marks McFeely is hard to discount, obviously, but I just think like that creative team in general, I guess, versus like really any like because Raimi. I know had a decent hand in like, I think he was fairly involved with some of the story calls from listening to Waldron discuss this. Like, I know that like the beat you were talking about with Black Bolt losing his mouth was a Raimi thing. Like, I think he
really, I do like that.
Like he like gets, but I think that you're right. Like those things are fun, but whenever he can kind of be zany with not a ton of consequences. Like that's what makes him so well suited for like a movie like this, where all this stuff happens, but most of it happens in other universes. Or like,
I mean, could he do like a Blade or a Midnight Suns thing? Let me keep thinking.
He could. I could see Blade. I don't know that Raimi's well suited for a team movie.
I know. That's what I'm trying to rule out some of these.
I would be happy for him to do a third Doctor Strange, I think. Although there's a part of me that, like, again, looking at this as, oh, he's exploring different things in different universes and letting it kind of have a different stamp because of that.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I just looked. I don't know.
Like, I almost kind of want, like, Derrickson to come back and do the next Doctor Strange, not because we need, like, a change, but just because I think that, like, I don't know. Like,
he also really cared about that too. Like, I think he would do it, right? Like, gladly. Well,
and that's a movie talking about some that have improved for me. That movie has gotten significantly better to me since we did our initial Infinity Saga rewatch.
How about, would you prefer this movie or that one? They're right there.
Man, it used to not even be close. And I think this one, but I don't know.
By the way, on the Sam Raimi front, this is going back. The only movie when I was going through that whole list that I thought might work would be Fantastic Four. Although I'm super stoked with what's happening, but I'm trying to think of something kind of quirky where like
that's
Raimi
true.
Would approach it with sincerity, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't see him doing a super cynical film.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's
but
why
that's a
I team think
up
it's...
movie too. And I don't know. There's also probably some projects that aren't named yet, you know, like,
oh, for
2026
sure.
Isn't that far away.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, even just dream casting, you know, like I'm just thinking of all the characters that he could continue with.
And
like,
I'm thinking too, I don't know.
I mean, I think that
I'm trying to think who's super grounded, but has a little bit of a fantastical element. Like, it's not grounded like Daredevil grounded to me.
Yeah. I mean, I could see a Daredevil take if he did a certain thing. Like, because again, Raimi doesn't have to be like Spider-Man 2 and the first Spider-Man. Like, they have elements that are kind of dated and campy in a certain sense, but it's not like they're like so goofy that it colors the whole thing. Like, so I think he would know how to set that aside to a degree, but I do think it needs to be something that is focused enough like a Daredevil, like where it's like, okay, right. This is the story of a person primarily.
That's why that one was on my mind too. 'Cause
that's what works so well in this movie.
I know. Like, yeah, that's fascinating discussion for another day. I was looking through even more of them. I'm like Brave New World maybe is grounded, but then like, I don't want that movie to have any camp really. Not a campy movie. I don't know.
Maybe Thor.
Too. I can't get the George Miller thing out of my head. And I'm thinking about, trust me, I just read the list and I was trying to process all of it. I mean, that could work maybe.
But yeah, we've got ourselves a bonus 10 minutes here.
Yeah, we did it. Thank you. Everybody, this is the time to get involved. That's also get involved. Yeah. July is going to be crazy. And there are so many different outlets that I don't want you to be missing things. So like, again, we have a YouTube channel, go to theffwpodcast.com for contact stuff, Discord. If you want conversation going, our newsletter is incredible for just staying up to date with the, the actual news. And then the podcast
is free as a reminder.
A lot of that's free. Everything I just is free except for Friends from Work Plus. So lots of offerings. Yeah,
find us on go to our website, go to our Substack. There's so much stuff that we're putting out that I think people that listen to the show would enjoy, and it is free and available for you. So
thoughts on Multiverse of Madness? Has it changed at all for you? Did you rewatch it recently? Any new discoveries? We'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, here we go. Next week, Deadpool hype, and we're fully on the Deadpool train for a month. Thanks for listening. We'll see you right back here on Friends for More.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.